Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us
Gary O'Neill,
Bruce Markwell,
and I'm Stuart Burks. Now, Gary, you had quite a long career in teaching and as a school principal. Would you like to tell us something about this?
I went to a teacher's college in Christchurch for the Whanganui Education Board in 1951. And I was offered to go to Wellington, but I said if I was going to leave home, I'd go away as far as I could. And yeah. I think that was to seek independence. So I had 2 years in Christchurch where I trained as a teacher.
So it was 2 years training.
2 years training.
Were you paid for that?
Yes, I was paid for that. Because I was at a border, if I remember rightly, we got £18 a month, and £12 of that went to pay the board. £2 or £3 went to pay your bill at the Red Cross for the textbooks that you bought there, and the rest you had to live on.
Mm-hmm.
So for social life, and I'd come from years of involvement in the scouting movement and had been to a boys only school, and I found one of the greatest difficulties in going to the teachers' college is that for every male there were two women, and so this was a new facet to my life, having to work alongside women, and that was quite a shock.
So this was 1951?
1951.
So all the returned servicemen or something, they'd gone through all their teacher training by then?
Yes, they've been on short term courses and so on. But I enjoyed the years in Christchurch, and I, at the same time, had always had been associated with scouting, and I ended up working with a group associated with the Catholic Church, which is called the Catholic Youth Movement. And in the 2 years I was there, they established a program. It was a national program, and the topic was putting Christ back into Christmas. And at that stage, Christmas was with an X, which still means Christ, but it was an X. And so it was interesting how this group of young people worked as part of the national concept of how they would get to the stage. And when they finally got Christmas stamps printed to put Christ back into Christmas. So that was an interesting concept away from being at Teachers College with a group of people who...
Why did they feel it was important then? Was it viewed very commercially at that stage?
Oh, it was very, very commercial. And it was a young people's thoughts and how they worked and so on.
But people, there would have been a lot more churchgoers at that time than there are.
Oh, it possibly were, yes. But it was the concept, it really was. But the 2 years in Teachers College was good from my point of view because I boarded with some magnificent family, which was in Barbados Street, just across from the Basilica. They used to ring the bell 5 minutes before the service started. I could get out of bed and be in the church by fast. So it's a little thing. But in reality, the Herlihy family were very good to me, and they had other boarders older than I was, which helped considerably in adjusting and being away from home. When I came back to Palmerston North, I had to do my compulsory military training, which was at the beginning of 1953. And so I didn't get to my first appointment, which was at Hokafuti School, that I'd attended as a young 5 and 6 year old. And I had it most enjoyable, but I didn't start really until nearly Easter because I had to do the full training.
So how long was your training?
That would have been 10 weeks. We went in on Boxing Day. So. And I enjoyed my life at the Hokafuti School, mainly because I'd gone to school there, and there were some of the pupils that I had gone to school with who were still living there, and so you had a little contact from there. And from Hokafuti, the next year I was applied for, and I got a job at Martin Junction, which is a railway settlement predominantly. So I went over there in 1954. And I can always remember going into the school, and of course it was the real first time where I saw the number of Maori students in the class. And I can always remember saying to the boss, his name was Les Tink, I said, who trains the rugby team? I was playing senior rugby at Palmer's North at that stage. And they said, you. And I can remember getting these kids out, and I'd change clothes and I'd have a bit of a rough and tumble. I said, if you put me down on the ground, that's a win for you. And of course, hardly ever did, but in essence. But I'll always recall this young Maori boy who was big and bulky. And I said, how can you dribble the ball? And he said, what do you mean? And I said, just do this with feet. I said, practice that. So, he said, I'm getting good at that. I said, how about if you're doing that, you roll your shoulders? He said, what'll that do? I said, well, you just learn to do that and roll your shoulders. And the next game I went out, and of course he was out there, he said, sir, they all fell off me as I was going through. And I thought, he was a young Maori boy, and I'd love to know where he is these days. But in essence, all he had to do was be shown a few skills, which I had just naturally did. But it gave an insight into where they were and where they lived and so on. And the class was big. I had 51 children.
Was that normal?
In 1954... And in 1954, yes. And I was in a temporary classroom that you could fit two dual-rolled desks, the old desks with the inkwell on the top, two rows and a row of single ones. And the back of the class was 13 levels back. That's how far they went back. Long, narrow, no heating, nothing was such. But... And I continued on.
So no heating, so it's very...
A pot-belly thing that hardly drew anything, but you froze there in the winter.
Okay.
Honestly, froze, and it was away from the school, it was in
temporary. So were there school uniforms, or they could...
No.
So they just wrapped up, really...
Yeah, but it was... I ended up playing rugby for Athletic and Martin in 57, and then came back to Palmerston North to Terrace End.
But just what was it like as a new teacher with... limited experience, they put you in front of 50-odd.
Yep.
How did you cope? Did your training give you skills for that?
And of course I was active sports-wise, so there was that aspect that helped to get an insight into it.
Was discipline a problem?
No, no problem.
Is that because of the nature of the kids?
Well, corporal punishment was still there, I must admit, at times I'd have used the strap.
Yeah.
But, you know, that was one of the detriments of misbehaviour, you know, you've got to live with that factor. So I stayed in Martin Junction until 57, but I came home to Palmerston North on a fairly frequent basis. Again, I was still involved in the Catholic Youth Movement, and I'd been president in Palmerston North. The first year I went to Martin, I was president in Palmerston North of the Catholic Youth Movement, and we were working with young people. We ran a dance on the third Sunday of every month.
Was that present? Was that national or local?
No, it's local, just local branch, yeah. So I was at Terrace End School, and I came there in the third term, and then the next year I carried on until 1961. And at that time I coached the football, and I was involved in youth work in the city, and I was also involved in emceeing dances and so on. So
you had time for this while working full time?
Yep. Just organise your day.
Yeah.
And we had, I thoroughly enjoyed it. In fact, I've just had contact from a couple of old pupils of mine just in the last few days, which is to do with an article I'm writing. And it was just a lovely time, and I met my wife in that stage, and we were married in 61. And from there I went out to Carnarvon, which was a sole teacher, where they had a vote to close the school because the building was shot, and it was on the main highway at a very dangerous point. So finally it was closed, and I then went north to Wardful, which was north of Matamata, and there... when we went there, we had one child, and two of our other children were born while we were there. And the community support there was very strong as such. I thought, this is how other work communities work. but it doesn't apply that way. I got involved in Lions there.
Now also, you were married, you had young children. Or had your wife worked? Was there any expectation that she'd work?
No, she was at home looking after the children.
Yeah. Were there expectations that she would support your role in the school? Or
answering the phone?
That's it, yeah.
Oh, she, well, by the time we left, we were three under five, so. I know, Mark, it was three there. Yeah, that's right, because they were born 2 years apart. Well, they go 2, 4, 6, so this is my wife coming home now. Just a minute. Yeah. And so from Waterfall, we went, and I went into the Master of Lions Club while I was there, and they were very supportive of what you want to do as far as the area is concerned. Parents were supportive, and I had good staff the whole time I was there.
Now, you're moving around a lot. Mm. Just off the record, we were talking about time it takes to fit into some communities. How were you... As the teacher, did this give you a special status, or you were absorbed equally and accepted easily?
I think, first of all, that coming as a principal, you're accepted to be there and to have the qualifications to run where you are. And then it's a matter of you establishing a bond with, initially it would be the school committee in your home and school association, and how you work in close harmony with them. They're interested in the dollars and cents, in the running of the school, and I was concerned with the overall running of it. In those days, you didn't have to give a monthly report of everything. You just talked. You gave a report, but it was not as detailed as they're required today. And so that if you got the right people together, they became the nucleus from which other things could happen. And so this was the first time that this... It had happened at Carnarvon before I shifted. There was a good group of people there. And from a different perspective in Waterfall. From there, we moved... The school had become... It was two teacher, and I went there, and it had become a three teacher just in my last year. So I applied for a number of jobs, and I finally ended up with the job in Gladstone, out from Masterton, a rural area where three other smaller schools had been consolidated onto Gladstone as such, and that in itself was quite a challenge, because you had eventually four districts with children coming in to one area. In essence, if you get the right people within the school and you have the right staff, you can then adventure into aspects and such. When I was at Gladstone, we had social study visits from other areas and such. Social studies as such was cultural, looking at cultures and such and other areas. And at that stage...
So what does that mean?
Looking at how the people live in other cultures other than the New Zealand culture. You'd pick a South American country and so on. And I had a marvellous collection of geographic magazines, so I had lots of resources and such. And the only... Of course, television didn't exist as such. And so the only resources you had was what you could get on film or film strips. Books you could borrow from the library, the National Library Service, school service and such. So it's a matter of where you were, those were the things. What we see is the computer age today didn't apply in any depth when I finished in 1987.
School library or
the you always had a school library, yeah. And then you'd get an allocation of library books every 6 months, and you'd have a new lot of books in, and you'd send some back from the National Children's Library as such, and they were a tremendous help to us as such. And so that was the resource, but in my teaching days, computer technology today just didn't exist, and you were just really looking at producing material as easily as possible.
There's another change also in that over the period of your teaching life, the expectation of people going on to higher education and university would have changed quite a bit.
Yes, there was that. You know, in the case of Wardful, the children went to Marsden to intermediate school, so I only had them through in those days instead of four. So, and I shifted to the Wairarapa, it was to form two level as such. And I don't know what it is today, but we had a bus run that took 35 to 40 minutes to come from the end in. And the road was treacherous. The children were not allowed to stand in the bus. They didn't even have straps in them at all. And we had three bus routes, so I had three buses attached to one school, which you had to supervise as well as your job.
So how many pupils in this?
In those days we were looking around the, it was three teachers, so it was looking around about 90 odd children all up. Got bigger later, but while I was there as such. I then was over here in Palmerston North, and I had a friend, Barry Slade, who was principal of St James School. He said, do you realise that the principal at Our Lady of Lourdes had passed on and had only been there two terms? And I said, no, I didn't. He said, I think you should apply for that job. Which I did, and so I came over to Palmerston North in the beginning of 1975 into Our Lady of Lourdes School, which was church-based as such, and the teaching of the Catholic faith was an important part about that life. A large number of the parents had been part of my days when I was in the Catholic Youth Movement. So I moved into an area where I had a church support, but I also had, there was a nucleus of people whom I had worked with many years beforehand, who came and gave tremendous support as such. One of the difficulties of facing Catholic education at that stage was that the religious orders numbers had, people entering into his vocation had dropped, and so the staff was predominantly, still had, there were still four nuns on the staff when I went there. But I decided, because the Integration Act had been through the first reading in the House in 73, and I decided that I would establish the routines necessary to run the school under the state service. And so I had a school committee elected on the same dates as everybody else, and they followed the pattern of them as such. And I restructured the Home and School Association.
Was it a major change that was required?
Not really, it was just a matter of a change of direction, really. It worked itself out fairly well. And in 1981, we were told that we were to be integrated. And 4 months later, we were. And then this was a complete change, you see, from a church school situation where the church maintained and looked after the, partly paid the costs of looking after the buildings that we had. And apart from the eight classrooms, the parish hall was alongside the school, and so with integration, that hall became part of the school.
How was it decided? Was it a church decision?
What happened is that we did the initial agreement in which the hall was not part of the integration, and that the school would have the use of it as such. But the integration agreement was changed and the hall was attached to the school as such. And so we had the hall to administer as well as the class. Okay. Which meant he looked after rentals and had to keep it clean and so on. But in reality, after the first year, there was an adjustment because, you know, the school had been predominantly religious order run, and there was nothing wrong with that. But whole concept had to change because the demands put on teachers was changing as such, and some of the elderly religious had difficulty in adjusting to that. But they were very supportive of the time that I was there. And the integration agreement was difficult because at that stage it was that we were in the Wellington Archdiocese, who were controlling all the schools in the diocese. When that Palmerston North Diocese was split off, and this was virtually within the first year of the integration agreement, so we had the Archdiocese in Wellington, whose person in education looked after the what was to become the Palmerston North Diocese, and that was our contact for any works that had to be done or approved from there. And so when the Palmerston North Diocese was established, they had to look at where the integrating schools all fitted into this, and we were the first of integrating schools, Catholic schools in this area as such, and so there was an adjustment to be done, very demanding. And of course, as far as Whanganui Education Board, this was a new venture for them also.
Where did the integration decision come from then? Was it
in realities in the late 60s, the church was facing the situation of not having enough religious to staff the schools, and had got to the stage into the 70s, and we're looking now at 72, 73, about from memory, that the church was not able to supply enough religious to teach the schools, and so the church had the choice of struggling on or closing all these schools. And so the government at the time recognised that something had to be done, because you could end up with a complete Catholic education system through the country closing. And think of all the staff and the buildings and so on. So that was really part of it as such.
So if I could just interrupt, so your employer really at that point in time was the church, not the Ministry of Education.
Yeah. And after integration, I became an employee of the Whanganui Education Board.
Education Board, yeah.
But were you still given much independence as integrated schools?
Oh, we had a few more demands because we were also involved in teaching the religious character of the school, so you had that extra subject as such. The Whanganui Board were very good. They really spent over backwards to try and get us established, and we then were told that the school had to be upgraded, and so the Whanganui Board supplied a plan which in reality looked good, but it didn't quite work out that way. But I had some other ideas, and so finally the school was completely updated. And like all things, the concept of funding changed too. Prior to integration, they got a lot of the grants that ordinary state schools got, and there was a degree of subsidising from the government for teachers, lay teachers who were in that were involved in the service. But as time we moved on, we slowly adjusted to the educational program. We were responsible through the inspectorate to the Whanganui Education Board, and the Catholic side of it we were responsible to the church, and the supervising factor in those days was based in Wellington.
Yeah.
It's changed since, but in those days, you know, and I've been gone for a long time.
Yeah. Were you still involved in the Tomorrow Schools phase?
No, I just got out before it started.
Did you have an opinion on it then? Were you thinking, oh, I want to get out first, or?
I was seeking promotion away from it, but the door to go into the state school system was virtually shut. They weren't accepting, or no principal of a Catholic school was accepted into the state services principals for a number of years.
Is there a reason for that?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know what the reason was.
Yeah, but
that
would have been suitable.
Oh, maybe in case some of them had become principals before their time. There could have been lots of reasons behind it, but in the essence, And so when staff had to be, staff left and you got a replacement, they were, their jobs were advertised in the Education Gazette, and the appointments are made by the inspectorate and with a church representative.
So was there an issue then for teachers as well? I'm thinking, say, when the teachers' college in Palmerston North merged into the university, yeah, and then there were different expectations on staff. Did the teachers in the Catholic schools find after integration they had to change a lot what they were doing, or their qualifications weren't recognised in the same?
Majority of the staff were Catholic to start with. Not all. In fact, when the last of the religious left the school, the woman who came in as my deputy was a non-Catholic, but a practicing Anglican. Mm-hmm. And I have no reservations about it at all. And I had other staff who were non-Catholic, but they accepted the Catholic philosophy and they did what was necessary. And we had one of the staff who was responsible for religious education who kept things going.
So you could carry on a lot of the traditions.
Oh, yes, yes.
And I was thinking more the other way, say staff who'd had 20 years experience teaching in a Catholic school. You said for principals there was a problem. Could they have just gone into a standard state school and they think you're doing the same thing?
So my staff left and went and worked in the state service. Some of them came in and over the years had gained experience enough for them to go back into the state service as such. In fact, I just read a comment the other day from someone who said, referring to me, he said he was good to me, he supported me. Mm. And that means a lot, you know. Mm. It was.
Now also, though, you've done teacher training.
Yes.
But you said for Catholic schools, there are people coming from nuns and the priesthood and so on. Would they have gone through the same teacher training or something?
Didn't apply to the clergy, but because it was a diocesan school, it wasn't like the Marist brothers, Marist fathers who ran the Hardaporu and in those days and St. Pat's Silverstream. And it never worried me, the concept that they were non-Catholic, because they lived within it. And if we had a function that was in the church, they participated. They never didn't have an occasion where they withdrew, because they accepted this was the concept that they moved to as such.
Yeah. But the training of the Catholic teachers?
The church had training courses that they could go to. In those days, the pastoral centre was open in Ihaka Street, and staff would go there for training.
So there are two parallel systems then? You went through the state
church involvement was really to do with program or material that could be used in the classroom to teach the Catholic philosophy.
Oh, so it's just for the religious part, it's a separate training.
All the staff were available to go to any of the state services. If there was something in town that was to do with it, we would free staff to go to that. So they were able to be integrated in that sense. They had the same holidays as anybody else, and they got paid the same money whether they're in the state or otherwise. And I got to the stage because I'd been through integration and I wanted to get myself promoted out of it, and I know I was shortlisted for a job, and then it went to somebody who only lasted two terms, but I came away and decided that I would toss it all in. And then I really had a different life from there on, because I didn't want to be seen to be a person, because I'd been ahead there for a long time to come back and influence stuff. So I never went back virtually anything to the school for over a year. Because I think they have to establish themselves. They don't want me breathing down their back. A religious followed me as principal, and then she moved away, and the next guy who was appointed, he was there for a number of years, and he was the first Catholic principal to win a job back into the state service. And he went to Dunedin from here. But, that was part and parcel of you get to the level where you just can't move anywhere ahead. And it was quite fascinating because prior to integration, I was interviewed twice for promotion into the state service, but after integration, I never got one. And I thought, how do you get them before and you don't get it after? It was something to do with the system. And it could be, you know, I jumped the ladder. You know, I had a 3-teacher school, and I dropped, and I went from that to an 8-teacher school, non-teaching principal. You know, that was a big change. I missed a bits in between, and of course, that would have had an influence on some of the decisions some people got in to the job. That, for example, that I applied for and I got was beaten by somebody else. He'd already been on transfer. He'd transferred to a job which he wasn't doing very well with, and transferred to another one. We did a whiz job, and that was it. But you know, that's part and parcel of it.
I think often the appointment issue, you know, how you select and do you choose the best people?
Well, of course, those days there were appointment boards. Today, the Board of Trustees have a lot of influence in the final decisions. But it's a different world.
Yes.
And you asked about tomorrow's schools.
Yeah.
Well, it came out in 1987, and it was sitting on an envelope in my table, and I looked at it and I put it back in again, and when the inspectors came and said to me, what do you think of tomorrow's schools? I said, it's still in the envelope. I said, you won't realise this, but I've actually just submitted my resignation for the end of the term. Yeah. He said, oh! But, you know, that's life. A school principal today carries a much heavier burden than my days. Yeah. Much heavier burden. Yeah. I have a young lad who's, well, he's not young now, he's in his 30s, who grew up with our children, and we used to go to a Hopi to the beach, and they were always there. And I was at his father's funeral. He said, I've just been told today that I've had a grant, the school's had a grant to build 3 new classrooms for $3 million. And I said, how, you sort of just recovered from the last lot, let alone this one. And he runs a very big Catholic school in the north there. So this is, you know, part and parcel of it. So education as such, I had service in the state and service in the church, and I was appreciative of what happened in that time.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.